This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
For now, in Beni, yes, our activities came to a stop, a halt right now. We hope that obviously the situation will become a bit better and that we can continue our activities.
That's Carl Tunis of MSF describing their efforts to contain the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, a UN report warns peace is impossible in Central African Republic without justice for victims. Leaders of the EU say they are exploring a landmark deal with Egypt, which they hope could alleviate a refugee crisis on the continent. And Angola's new president is winning widespread praise for his anti-corruption efforts. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. The United Nations General Assembly continues with attention going to the speeches given by the leaders of Israel and Palestine territories today. Also today, the leader of the island of Cyprus urged world leaders to work together to create a global strategy on migration instead of short-term moves to deal with migrant flows. Yesterday, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa spoke to the Assembly for the first time since he replaced longtime leader Robert Mugabe last year. He promised new reforms politically and economically in the country.
We have outlined our vision to become a middle-income economy with a per capita income of about $3,500. This will bring on board increased investment, decent jobs, broad-based empowerment, and a society free from poverty and corruption by 2030. Zimbabwe is open for business.
Mnangagwa also called for an end to economic sanctions in his country, imposed to punish the former Mugabe government for its human rights abuses. Today, the leaders of Cameroon, Ethiopia, and Uganda are among the speakers at the annual gathering of world leaders in New York. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Tibor Nagy says the Trump administration is watching closely the remarkable pace of political change in Ethiopia. In the second part of his interview with VOA's Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick, he discusses China, Nigeria, and the work of Ethiopia's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed.
It has been a total paradigm shift from the point of view of the Ethiopian public, but also the international community. And he was able to take these steps very quickly, including the very bold step of just saying to Eritrea, we'll comply with the, you know, the peace process. We will comply with the Boundary Commission's ruling, which was not, internally, it was not an easy step for Ethiopia to take. And just all of a sudden, the borders opening up between Ethiopia and Eritrea. Ethiopian Airlines making the flight to Asmara, which I wish. When I was ambassador there, I told people I want to be on that first flight. Well, I couldn't be, but hopefully I can make it at some point soon. So again, it shows you the difference that one true leader can make, the difference that leadership can make, and the positive reaction to opening up political space. There is still a certain amount of fragility in this whole process because there is still an entrenched mindset, which is very much against these kind of changes.
I want to move on to very briefly Nigeria.
Nigeria.
President Buhari visited the White House not too long ago. At this point and under this administration, how would you describe the relationship right now between the United States and Nigeria?
The United States considers Nigeria one of our key, I'd say even critical partners in Africa. You know, the largest economy, or sometimes the second largest economy, depending on how it was measured. The largest population, which will double to 360 million by 2050 and replace the United States as the world's third largest country. Tremendous, you know, oil production, young people, dynamic, and a real genuine security partner for the United States. We have to have a partnership. So even if the relationship was not cooperative, we would have to have some type of a partnership with Nigeria because of the critical role that it plays in Africa. Having said that, we obviously will be watching closely the political process leading to the elections. Nigerian elections are always exciting to watch. To be the leader of Nigeria is probably one of the hardest jobs in the world. And so we want to be there, we want to cooperate, we want to be very supportive. And again, the United States doesn't have a candidate. The candidate is the process, and when the process plays out, we very much hope to remain and engage further with Nigeria as a critical partner in Africa.
China.
Yes.
$60 billion in loans and aid.
Yes.
To African countries.
Yes.
They've said that the development that they're engaging in, they want it to be development that Africans can see, that they can touch, that's green and sustainable. Is there a race for investment, for economic, for military, for the hearts and minds, for that kind of primacy? Is there a race for primacy between China and
No, I wouldn't call it a race for primacy because I think America generally agrees that if there's open competition, let the best person win the competition, but let the competition be fair.
Do you think the competition is fair?
No, not in many places, but it needs to be. And the other thing that gets me is, people are touting China's numbers, and somehow they overlook the fact that we spend, I believe, $3 billion a year on fighting, with PEPFAR, with fighting diseases, incredible amounts of money on education programs in Africa, Power Africa, Feed the Future. So overall government investments and private sector investments, if you look at the totality, the United States is second to no one.
That was Ambassador Tibor Nagy, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. He was speaking to VOA's Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick during the annual United Nations General Assembly events. A UN human rights expert warns true peace in Central African Republic will not be possible without justice for the hundreds of thousands of victims who have suffered violence and human rights abuses during more than 5 years of civil war. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the latest report on the situation in CAR has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council.
War between the Muslim Seleka and mainly Christian anti-Balaka groups in Central African Republic has taken a heavy toll. The UN Refugee Agency reports nearly 582,000 people have fled as refugees to neighboring countries, and more than 687,000 are internally displaced. The independent expert on the situation of human rights in CAR says some crucial steps have been taken in establishing a system of transitional justice and peace in the country. Marie-Thérèse Keita-Bokoum welcomes these moves, but says the success of ongoing reforms can only be assured if they are based on justice for the victims. She says people in the country are still suffering from lack of consultation at all levels. She speaks through an interpreter.
Their participation in peace cannot be optional. Their voice has to be heard alongside that of the government and the armed groups as well, as part of the African Facilitators Panel. An inclusive panel needs to build in consultation with all swathes of the population, reaching out to all the different tribes and the hundreds of thousands of CAR refugees.
Bokoum warns the situation of human rights is threatened by public incitement to violence and media-sponsored hate speech by various factions. She says discrimination and marginalization based on religion and ethnicity also are of great concern. The Central African Republic's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Leopold Ismail Samba, says his country is committed to finding solutions to the violation of human rights and international humanitarian law. He says his government wants to restore true rule of law, ensuring peace and security throughout the territory. But he notes these challenges can only be met with the support of the international community. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, is accustomed to dealing with risk to provide needed medical assistance Their efforts to help contain the latest Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC has gone relatively smoothly until Saturday. One of the area's more than 100 armed groups launched an hours-long attack in Beni, the center for fighting the virus. Now the doctors and nurses have been forced to hunker down as the area marks a mourning period mixed with angry protests over the attack that killed 21 people, including 17 civilians. Carl Tunis of MSF describes the efforts and the frustration as they forced inactivity means Ebola, which already has killed 100 people, can spread again. He speaks from Beni to my colleague Paul Alexander.
Until now, until last Saturday, to our amazement, everything went actually quite well. As this region is, of course, known for a big, for a lot of insecurity. But until Saturday, there were not a lot of problems. And for now, in Beni, yes, our activities are came to a halt right now. So we hope that obviously the situation will become a bit better and that we can continue our activities.
So your staff, have they been just staying strictly indoors?
Everything was more or less closed on Monday, and Tuesday it was a big manifestation also. And yes, our activities in Beni itself, we stopped them and we stayed in our base. Our other activities in other parts of North Kivu, like in Mangina, where the epidemic started, they just continued in Butembo also.
So are you and the rest of the staff worried about these recent attacks and your own security?
Well, I think it's always something to be worried about. For now, none of our staff has been attacked or anything, or there is no direct consequence of the insecurity apart from the fact that we have to stay indoors. So let's hope that we can start working and start helping people very soon again.
This must be fairly frustrating.
Yes, of course, but also not, it's a complete surprise to us, of course. If you know the history a bit of the region, you know there are certain security factors you also have to take into account. So this doesn't come as a complete surprise. This was always one of the risk factors that was there. But yes, of course, it's frustrating. You want to make sure that this disease doesn't spread.
So new cases seem to be popping up in new areas. That also must be a pretty big concern.
Indeed, this is a big difference with the previous epidemic in the west of Congo in May. Here we have a quite densely populated area, and there's a lot of movements between quite big cities, and it's very difficult to do this active tracing of people that were in contact with somebody who has or had Ebola.
Are you running into more resistance from local communities than you did in the west?
People obviously are afraid, and then if you look at the history also of this region, there's a lot of violence already going on. I think that also contributes to the fact that people, they distrust the activities. That's why maybe there is some resistance. And then it's of course the role of us also to do more health promotion to inform people. I think that's the key to resolve also the epidemic, so people know when they have the symptoms, if they have to go to an Ebola treatment center or at least get checked.
So what's the assessment for the future? Is this going to get worse before it has a chance to get better?
It's very, very difficult to predict these kind of epidemics. So it can go both ways. Obviously, right now, if you look at the situation, it doesn't look very good. So, at this point, we can definitely say that the epidemic is definitely not over yet.
Are you guys in contact with any of these armed groups trying to get them to at least hold off until you can get this under control?
Our policies, we're impartial and neutral. So we have contact with everybody, let's say. And that's just to make sure we can do our job. We have our own contacts to make sure that we can go and we can normally treat everybody.
That was Carl Tunis of MSF, Beni DRC. He spoke with VOA's Paul Alexander. Somalia's finance minister says World Bank grants to the government are a sign the country has trustable leadership, again after decades of chaos and corruption. The World Bank says it will provide $80 million in grants to Somalia's federal government, the bank's first direct grants to a Somali central authority in 27 years. Finance Minister Abdulrahman Duale Bele told VOA Somali Service the grants are proof of Somalia's merit. Bele said $60 million will be used to increase the capacity of Somalia's financial institutions and $20 million will go toward education and energy projects. The World Bank cut ties with Somalia in 1991 following the collapse of the Mohamed Siad Barre government and the start of a long civil war. 20 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, leaders of the EU say they are exploring a landmark deal with Egypt, which they hope could alleviate a refugee crisis that has upended politics on the continent. An agreement could see Egypt step up its policing of coastal waters and divert refugees intercepted on the Mediterranean Sea to the country. In exchange, the EU would offer Egypt substantial investments and other financial incentives. If successful, the effort would represent an important development in the U.S. concerted or EU's concerted campaign to stem the flow of Europe-bound migrants by working with transit countries or home countries of the new arrivals. However, many NGOs have expressed horror at the idea due to Egypt's record on human rights. They also say the deal does not address the reasons people leave their home countries in the first place. Reporter Catherine Field is covering the talks. She spoke with me about the proposed agreement and its implications.
What the EU is hoping to achieve is that they will get Egypt, if you like, on board to set up one of these disembarkation centers or a processing center whereby migrants who have come up from the sub-Sahara region will be processed in these centers so that these people won't need to go further along the coast to get a boat to Europe. They will know that they can be processed there by officials who are trained and who have oversight from the European Union. What the EU is hoping is that they can replicate the agreement that they have in place with Turkey to stop migrants from going from there to the European Union. This is why they hope that, if you like, money and aid in exchange for keeping a lid on migration to Europe, that is what they want to see from Egypt. Also, a way of fortifying borders, making it harder for people to get to Europe, to get asylum, and that this sort of fits in with this whole notion now that the European Union needs to have cooperation with countries across Africa if it's going to stem the tide of migrants coming across from there.
Is this something they are proposing to Egypt, and what is Egypt's response to this?
Indeed, just over the weekend, there have been several meetings. High EU officials have met the Egyptian president on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. There's also been meetings actually in Egypt with the senior officials from the European Union. Now, of course, Egypt at the moment is very keen to have these types of relations with the European Union because since President al-Sisi took power, it has been a bit of a pariah. It has been seen by certain members of the international community and certainly NGOs, a country which the West should not be doing that much business with at the moment because of its human rights record. So the contexts are there. They are trying to work them. But it really does show that the European Union just wants any possible improvement in relations that will help it to stem this migration flow.
What are NGOs saying? What is their reaction?
Their reaction is actually, many of them, is just horror. Because on the one hand, they see the human rights situation in Egypt. And on the other, you know, they see the human rights and the economic situation in sub-Saharan Africa. And they're saying, look, you're putting all this money, all this effort into Egypt. Really, have another look at what you're doing on the ground there. So they're a little bit horrified. And at the same time, they're saying it does not solve the issue of why these people are leaving home and wanting to make it into the European Union.
In terms of numbers, what are some of the actual numbers that we're looking at for migration?
In terms of numbers from Egypt, it's very small. It's less than a couple of hundred for the whole year so far. But the European Union wants to make sure that that stops. But they are still not convinced that the numbers of people that are starting perhaps in Egypt, who are moving from Egypt to other countries along the North African coast, that is what they really want to make sure that stops completely, if you like, so as they cut off that passage. Yes, it is very small numbers coming from Egypt, but the European Union sees this as just another vital point that they need to close off in, if you like, that whole ring of the Eastern Mediterranean, whether it be from Turkey all the way down through, and that would include Egypt and Libya.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris. Angola's President João Lourenço is winning widespread praise for his anti-corruption efforts. The arrest this week of the son of the former president sent shockwaves through the nation and won the approval of analysts who say Lourenço has made meaningful steps toward cleaning up corruption. But is it enough to turn around the nation's struggling economy? VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Even the toughest critics of Angola's government say, in just more than a year, President João Lourenço has accomplished more to stop corruption than any previous Angolan administration. Lourenço took power last September after the retirement of longtime President José Eduardo dos Santos, whose cronies and family members controlled every important company and source of wealth in the country. But Lourenço has swept away a number of allegedly corrupt top officials who, under dos Santos, were considered untouchable. Most notably, the ex-president's son, Filomeno, who ran the nation's sovereign wealth fund, was arrested this week on allegations of money laundering, embezzlement, and fraud. Journalist and human rights activist Rafael Marques, who was arrested for his corruption exposés during the dos Santos era, says the new president deserves praise.
I would give Lourenço 8 out of 10 simply because he inherited a country where corruption was so ingrained, so institutionalized, that it became the institution itself. The government itself was corruption. I think he deserves great credit for what he's done in terms of also letting the judiciary have the power to indict and arrest some of these most notorious corrupt officials.
Researcher Alex Vines, who heads the Africa program for Chatham House, says the purge has been rewarded because the nation's biggest investors, international oil and gas companies, have decided not to pull out of the resource-rich nation. But he says more needs to be done to rebuild the country.
This is a transition process still. It will progress in fits and starts. But I think we are beginning to see that these reform efforts aren't just about the consolidation of power from dos Santos to Lourenço, but is beginning to become a bit more equitable.
Vine says he believes Lourenço is trying to position the ruling party for future elections.
But he will be severely tested, I think, in 2020 with the local elections. They're the first ever in Angola's history. And the MPLA is worried that in certain districts in Angola, it might do poorly. And so these reforms are really all about the MPLA and about renewal.
Marques says for the party to pull ahead, it needs to boost the economy and provide jobs for millions of unemployed Angolans. He says until that happens, Angolans will not be convinced that anything has changed at the top. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shaogun Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Stand up!